Vaikatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Vaikatra AI. So when you hear branding, what usually springs to mind, for most people, it's probably, you know, advertising agencies, maybe glossy ads, or just a logo.
Yeah, something sort of fluffy.
Yeah.
Marketing costs.
Exactly. We kind of file it away as decoration.
And that's precisely the thinking we're aiming to unpack today. We're diving deep into the strategic perspective of Robert M. Grant on branding. The mission here is to really shift that perception.
Okay.
Branding isn't just surface-level stuff. Grant argues it's maybe the most powerful strategic asset a modern company actually controls.
That's a big claim. So he's not seeing it as just communications.
Not at all. He treats it like an economic engine, something
yeah.
capable of generating real, tangible financial value, premium pricing, market stability.
Oh, yeah.
And all of that value comes from these intangible perceptions, things that exist purely in the consumer's mind.
Right. Intangible, but with very tangible results.
Precisely.
Yeah.
And that's the core difference between just, say, marketing tactics and genuine strategic management.
Okay. So to really get this, we probably need to understand the person behind these ideas. Who is Robert M. Grant? He's not your typical ad guru, right?
Definitely not. He's a highly respected professor of strategic management. He's held positions at top institutions, Bocconi University, London Business School, places like that.
Okay. So that context is really important. He's coming at branding from a place of rigorous analytical economic strategy.
Exactly. It's the same kind of framework he uses in his, well, his massive textbook, Contemporary Strategy Analysis, which is, you know, a cornerstone in the field.
So he's not focused on the creative side, necessarily.
Not primarily. He's applying hard business models, strategic frameworks, to understand how trust and perception are built and managed. It's about the architecture of trust, if you like.
I like the architecture of trust.
Yeah. His real unique contribution is bridging that gap, you mm-hmm. know, between often dense academic theory, things like the resource-based view of the firm, and what businesses actually do day to day.
He makes it practical.
He makes you realize a brand isn't just a promise the marketing department makes. It's a resource, often a non-replicable one, that gives a company a lasting competitive edge.
Okay, so let's dig into that core thesis then. If a brand isn't just the logo or the name, what is it, according to Grant?
Well, Grant defines it as this complex bundle, a bundle of meanings, associations, expectations. And critically, it exists mainly in the consumer's mind. It's a mental thing.
A mental construct.
Exactly. And historically, if you trace the word back, it comes from Old Norse, brander.
Right, which meant to burn or to mark livestock.
Yeah, literally marking ownership. And today, it's still a mark of ownership in a way, but it's a mental mark. It signals things like trust, reliability, expected quality.
That distinction just changes everything, doesn't it? We think of, I don't know, a phone being made in a factory. But Grant's saying the brand part is built, it's nurtured, and it lives entirely inside our heads.
And that mental real estate is where the enormous value lies. I mean, think about why we as consumers actually value brands.
Okay.
They cut down our search costs massively. You don't need to spend hours researching every single component in the latest iPhone, for example.
Right. The Apple brand itself is a shortcut. It signals a certain level of quality, a certain experience you expect.
Exactly. That reduction of risk, the simplification of choice in a crowded market, that's the immediate value brands give us.
And for the company.
Well, that mental mark translates directly into pricing power. They can often charge a premium.
That reduction of risk is huge for consumers. Let's explore that dual value creation a bit more. So for the consumer, it's like these powerful information shortcuts.
Yeah. Heuristics is the psychological term. They simplify decisions when we're faced with just an overwhelming number of choices. We rely on them, often without even thinking about it. But it goes beyond just the functional benefit of saving time or reducing risk. Brands offer really profound psychological benefits, too. And symbolic ones.
Symbolic? How so?
No, it's not just about what the product does. It's about what owning or using that brand says about you.
Okay. Like expressing identity.
Precisely. Driving a certain car, wearing certain clothes, mm-hmm. even choosing a specific coffee brand, it can signal your values, your aspirations, maybe your status or your environmental consciousness. You're communicating something about yourself.
Like buying a Tesla isn't just buying a car. It's making a statement about innovation or maybe the environment.
Exactly. And then you flip that coin. For the company producing the goods, the value is immediate and, importantly, measurable.
Right. You mentioned price premiums.
Absolutely. A strong brand allows a company to charge more. Think about basic painkillers. You might have a branded bottle of aspirin selling for, say, $15.
Mm-hmm.
And right next to it, the chemically identical generic version for $4. That massive $11 difference, that's almost entirely the power of the brand, the trust, the familiarity.
Wow, that's stark when you put it like that.
It is. And that leads us directly into this key concept, brand equity.
Okay, brand equity. What is that exactly?
So this is the actual measurable financial value of the brand as an intangible asset. Grant defines it quite formally as the differential effect that brand knowledge has on consumer response to marketing.
Hmm. Okay, that sounds a bit academic. Can you break that down? Maybe an analogy?
Sure. Think of brand equity like an invisible competitive parachute strapped to your company.
Okay, a parachute.
Yeah. So imagine a competitor copies your product feature, or maybe they slash their prices trying to undercut you. If you have strong brand equity, that reservoir of trust and positive association in consumers' minds, it acts like a parachute.
Yeah.
It helps keep your profit margins and often your market share from plummeting. It keeps you afloat while the storm passes. Technology can be licensed. Products get copied all the time.
Right.
But that deep-seated brand equity built up over years in people's minds, that's a truly durable advantage. It's incredibly hard, almost impossible, to replicate quickly.
That makes a lot of sense. So if you're managing a business, Grant would say one of your biggest challenges is managing this gap. He calls it the strategic gap.
That's right. It's the crucial gap between brand identity and brand image.
Identity versus image. What's the difference?
Brand identity is what the company wants to be seen as. It's the intended message, the values they try to project.
Okay, the aspiration.
Exactly. And brand image is the reality. It's how consumers actually perceive the brand based on all their experiences with it.
And when those two don't line up,
that gap is where value gets destroyed. It represents a strategic failure, a misalignment. Imagine a big tech company pouring millions into ads about being innovative and simple.
Yeah.
But then their actual customer service is a nightmare, complicated, frustrating. The brand image quickly becomes frustrating and expensive, totally undermining the intended identity.
And that gap, as you said, it just erodes that precious brand equity.
Faster than almost anything else.
So this sounds incredibly complex to manage. Where do you even start, according to Grant?
You have to start with positioning. Grant frames this as the fundamental strategic choice you make.
Positioning, like where you sit in the market.
Precisely. It's about defining the specific, unique niche your brand occupies in the consumer's mind, especially relative to your competitors. It's like drawing a line in the sand and saying, this is who we are and this is who we're for.
Can you give an example?
The classic one is the Avis campaign from decades ago. We try harder.
Oh, yeah. I remember that. Hertz was number one.
Right. Avis made a brilliant strategic choice. They didn't pretend to be number one. Instead, they owned the position of the determined underdog. Their whole message was, we're number two, so we have to provide better service, work harder for your business.
And that positioning was incredibly successful for them.
For decades, it gave them a clear, distinct place in the market.
Okay, so you nail down your positioning. But what if you're a huge company with lots of different products or services? How do you manage all those brands? It sounds like brand architecture.
Exactly. That's the next layer of complexity. Grant lays out two main models really clearly. What are they? The first is the branded house, sometimes called the monolithic model. Think Virgin.
Ah, right. Virgin Atlantic, Virgin Money, Virgin Mobile. It's all Virgin.
Perfect example. They leverage that core Virgin brand equity across almost everything they do. The big advantage is synergy. The positive vibes from one area can lift others. It's also usually more cost efficient in terms of marketing spend.
But the risk seems huge. If one park, say Virgin Trains, has a major problem,
it splashes back onto everything with the Virgin name on it. That's the inherent risk, the central trade-off. High potential for synergy, but also high potential for contagion if things go wrong.
Okay, so what's the alternative?
That's the house of brands, sometimes called the freestanding model. Procter & Gamble is the absolute master of this.
P&G. I mean, I know the name, but I don't really think of buying P&G products.
Exactly. That's the point. The corporate P&G name is almost invisible to shoppers. You buy Tide or Pampers or Gillette or Crest. Each one is a powerful standalone brand.
Right. Tide doesn't rely on Pampers' reputation or vice versa.
Precisely. P&G can have multiple detergent brands like Tide and Gain. competing fiercely in the same market segment, even against each other.
Wow.
And if one brand faces a crisis, it generally doesn't damage the others. It isolates the risk beautifully.
That's strategically very clever. Different approaches for different situations.
Absolutely. But regardless of which structure you choose, branded house or house of brands grant, stresses that the crucial element is consistency.
Consistency across the board.
Every single element of the brand identity. The logo, the tone of voice, the stated values, the core promise, all of it has to translate perfectly and consistently across every single point where a customer interacts with the brand.
Every touch point.
Every touch point. From the advertising to the website to the product packaging to the customer service call to the retail environment. Mm. And Apple is usually held up as the gold standard here, right?
Yeah, you can see that. Everything feels Apple, the stores, the website, the unboxing experience.
It all reinforces that core identity of simplicity, elegance, high-end innovation. That seamless integration is incredibly powerful.
Okay, speaking of touch points, we can't talk about modern branding without getting into the digital disruption. How has that changed the game?
Oh, massively. Hmm. Grant points out that branding used to be largely a one-way street, a brand monologue.
Meaning the company just broadcasted its message, like TV ads, print ads.
Exactly. They controlled the message. But now, with social media, online reviews, user-generated content, it's turned into a sprawling, chaotic consumer dialogue.
The control is gone.
Largely, yes. And Grant has a really key insight here. He says something like, in the digital age, brands can no longer control their messages. They can only hope to influence the conversation.
Influence, not control. That's a huge shift.
It really is. And it puts immense pressure on companies to be authentic and transparent. Because if there's a gap between your stated identity and the actual customer experience,
consumers will call you out on it instantly.
Yeah.
And loudly.
And amplify it globally. The risk of exposure for hypocrisy or poor service is just enormous now.
But does this digital shift also create opportunities?
Absolutely. It's kind of democratized brand building in a way.
How so?
Well, historically, building a major brand required massive resources, huge advertising budgets. Now, creativity, authenticity, and building a genuine community online can sometimes overcome those resource disadvantages.
So startups can compete more effectively.
Yes. Think about some of those direct-to-consumer brands that exploded Warby Parker for glasses, Casper for mattresses early on. They didn't launch with Super Bowl ads.
Right. They used smart digital marketing, focused on customer experience, built communities.
Exactly. They built brand equity through targeted digital conversations and delivering on their promises, proving you don't always need the massive traditional ad spend if you can genuinely connect with people.
It's fascinating how that power has shifted.
It is. And this ability of branding to shape perception and desire so powerfully. This also leads Grant to touch upon what he calls the darker side.
The darker side. What does he mean?
Well, he acknowledges the criticism that branding can fuel materialism and excessive consumerism. Because it's so good at creating desire, sometimes for things we don't strictly need.
Mm. Yeah, I can see that argument.
But, interestingly, the digital age might actually be pushing back against the worst impulses. Because, as we said, the lack of message control forces companies towards greater authenticity and ethical behavior. The potential cost of getting caught cutting corners or being unethical is just too high now.
That's an interesting counterintuitive point. The transparency forces better behavior, maybe?
It can, yes. The strategic incentive shifts towards actually being the good brand you claim to be.
Okay, so let's bring this home. If Grant's core message is that brands are these powerful strategic assets built in the mind, how can someone listening apply these ideas?
Well, the most direct personal application is probably thinking about your own brand. Personal branding.
Applying Grant's strategic lens to ourselves.
Exactly. Ask yourself, what's my professional value proposition? What unique skills, experience, or perspective am I bringing to the table, to the job market, or even just to my team?
Okay, defining your product.
Right. And then, critically, how do I ensure consistency across all my personal touch points?
Touch points like my resume, my LinkedIn profile.
Absolutely. And also how you communicate in emails, how you conduct yourself in meetings, the quality of the work you deliver. Are all those signals aligned? Do they consistently reinforce the professional identity you want to project?
That consistency builds your personal brand equity, your reputation, your trustworthiness.
Precisely. It's about consciously managing the perception you create.
That's really practical. And looking at the bigger picture, the enduring lesson I take from Grant is that truly strong brands, the ones that last, They aren't built on clever slogans or slick campaigns alone.
No, fundamentally, they're built on authentic stories.
Right.
Stories that genuinely resonate with customers' own values, their identities, their aspirations.
Like Harley Davidson, they don't just sell motorcycles, do they?
Not at all. They sell freedom, rebellion, individuality, community, a whole lifestyle. The physical bike is almost secondary to the powerful brand meaning they've built. It transcends the product.
A brand is a community.
Yeah. And if we tie this all back to Grant's strategic perspective, he really hammers home that branding is a long-term game. It's an investment in building trust and consistency over time.
So thinking about today's world, with the digital age demanding authenticity.
Right. It raises a really interesting question, doesn't it? If authenticity and transparency are now key strategic drivers, which of the modern brands may be the ones born digital, built on community and conversation? Which ones will prove to have built the most durable, the most valuable brand equity 50 years from now?
That's a great question to ponder. Which brands are truly building that deep, authentic trust for the long haul?
It really makes you think about the difference between fleeting hype and lasting strategic value. That's the power of Grant's approach.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ocotra Foundation.